Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 4 of Slamfire Radio. And this week we are missing.
Are you sure we don't have to change the name again?
This week we're pretty sure we're good with this name. I think we're going to stick with it. I mean, we have gone 3 whole episodes, you know, and changed our name almost every time. So,
any and all likeness of this radio broadcast to any another radio broadcast, it's purely coincidental.
Completely. You may notice that that is not the warrior who is joining us this evening. Owen is off doing family stuff, I think.
He's not a LARPer either.
Lame. So we've got Mo Hepworth. The Mo. If you hear us talking about Mo on CRR, this is who we're talking about. It's Mo. So Mo, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Yeah, it's Trevor's pleasure mostly, but
you don't like anybody, do you, Matthew?
I try not to, really. A buffer zone.
Mean. So mean.
Did I make you cry yet?
I have a gun in my hand right now. I'm just playing with it. And never mind. Yeah,
stop pointing it at the camera.
He's got a picture of you on his wall.
Yeah, click, click.
Not his fault, Mo. That. Matthew's heart is filled with hate.
And oil. And plastic.
and Smurf juice.
Well, you got to squeeze them just right to get the right amount of Smurf out.
Yeah, well, before the jelly comes out.
You got to squeeze the Smurf right out of them.
Once they go purple, you'll never go back.
Get nap.
Okay, so
I remember that.
Thank you.
I shouldn't be actually saying it.
Bite him on the tail.
Yeah.
Well, oh, that digressed. So, how about we talk about guns?
Hey, gun.
It was funnier the other way. But yeah, so Mo is our resident, and by resident I mean province of New Brunswick IPSC shooter, basically. So we kind of thought Mo would come on and talk to us a little bit about IPSC and maybe share some of his secrets. I don't know.
Especially after you and Owen pooped all over IPSC on Owen's show.
Tell me we lied. Tell me we were wrong. God.
Well, I didn't hear that show. Right. So I cannot comment.
Either because we called it a game.
Yeah, here's the
thing. It is. No, absolutely. Yep. It's a great game, but it is a game because, now, and this may not say I'm politically correct, but it's a game because no one shoots back at you.
Yeah.
That's true. And not only that, it's more Formula One as opposed to rally car racing. Because even IDPA is a game, but IDPA is more realistic. Just not realistic. I mean, you're never going to get perfect realism because if you did, you might end up dead.
Exactly. And if anybody shot back at you in any of those sports, you probably wouldn't want to participate.
No. Right? Probably not.
Not so much.
However, let me say this, that you can slow down at IPSC if you choose to.
Yes, and some of our participants do try and shoot it as practically as possible. There are guys like you and I that shoot it one way, and there are guys like Matthew and Owen that try and take the opportunity to use it as training or practice. What's your opinion on IPSC as a means of practicality? You know, it stands for, IPSC stands for International Practical Shooting Confederation. Do you think there's anything left that's practical in IPSC, or has it gone completely into a game?
Well, despite all of the gear and equipment changes and the fancy race guns with the red dot sights and the optics and the compensators, you still have to draw the gun fast most times, depending on the stage. You still have to shoot fast, and you still have to get good hits. So, I mean, we can say that, well, in this stage, we're standing in a box and there's no cover. However, I mean, a wooden barrier can be a cover in IDPA. But in like an IPSC, I mean, you don't have to have that option. You don't have to shoot from behind a barrier. Although, we do know that in some matches, they do have barriers and fault lines that help to simulate those barriers.
So it does help build your fundamentals. It does help
absolutely.
You in certain skills, absolutely, yeah. But it's not, like you said, it's still a game. It's still taking your car onto the track at the racetrack and driving around really fast in a circle. That's not going to help your driving skills per se, but it is going to help you, you know, learn how to drive your car, learn how to drive your gear kind of thing.
Yeah, but that usually translates over to being able to pick up just about any other gear and use it just as well.
That's true, too, yeah. And I think I've seen that with Trevor, actually, is we just taught a black badge course a couple weeks ago, and one of the students was having a bit of trouble getting some good hits, and Trevor took his gun, a gun that Trevor's never, I don't think, even laid eyes on before, picked it up and drilled, you know, 20 shots almost to the same hole. So you don't even have to be familiar with the equipment. So long as you have the fundamentals, you got a good grip, you got a good stance, good sight picture, and a good trigger press, you're golden.
Yeah, that's true.
And that
we had the same thing in our black badge too. We had one student using an M&P 40, and he was using full power American Eagle ammo, and he was all over the place and missing a bit, although he was trying his best. And we went out with him, and after he had failed a couple of the requirements for the black badge, like the hadn't been successful on a couple of the exercises, he had to reshoot them, obviously, but. I stopped and everybody else went back to reload their mags, and I stayed with him, and then we worked with just doing something that he thought he was doing. He said, "I'm looking at the front sight." I said, "Well, yes, you are." I said, "But I think you're flinching at the last moment because your hits aren't on target. Because if you had done exactly what I had done, which is follow the front sight up and out of the notch and back into the notch and then press the trigger, I said, you wouldn't be hitting the target." So I used his gun. I got them all in the A zone at roughly 13 yards, I think it was. And then he did it without any time limits, and we went through the same exercise, and he was successful in getting all his hits on the target. Not all A's, but they were all on the target. So falling, he goes, I guess I wasn't. So it's hard to, I guess, get these guys that haven't really shot as much. This guy hadn't shot as much in his defense. And to get him following his front sight, which is the basic thing you need to do, is follow your front sight. You can jerk the trigger, but if your front sight is not lined up, you're going to miss the target, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole idea behind sights. You line them up to on what you want to hit.
Yeah.
I want us to come back to black badge at some point in the conversation, but right now we're kind of talking about IPSC as training, let's say. And I'm of the opinion that a lot of it has to do with the stage designers. Now, when I design a stage, I design it with as many ridiculous scenarios as possible with regards to shooting in uncomfortable positions, shooting poppers and movers and actuators. I want a busy, ridiculous stage with all kinds of simultaneous action.
See, what you're going for is like an action movie.
Well, not even more like a video game, kind of like Duck Hunt on steroids or something. But
right.
Now, Matthew, because you like more of the practical aspect of it, you would probably design your stages. Basically, you would design IDPA stages and write stage descriptions or procedures that would be very similar to IDPA, because that's kind of shooting that you prefer. Now, I like the game aspect of it. What about you, Mo? When you design a stage, are you biased one way or the other, or do you always go for a good balance? What do you go for?
I like to think I go with a good balance. I'll have up close targets where you draw the gun from the holster. You know, it's the gun's loaded because that's what usually most, when you carry a gun, we don't carry guns in Canada, obviously, for self-defense right now. So when you draw a gun, it should be loaded. It should be coming from your holster. There's other stages where you have the gun, it's over here, and then you have the mags over there. Well, because in Canada, we can have our gun inside the same safe as the mags, it doesn't kind of make sense to me.
Right, you have to retrieve your mag. Yeah,
you have to retrieve your mags from a different part of the stage. But anyways, I don't know where I'm going with that.
That's all right.
You're trying to keep your stages realistic.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, too, like when I set up stages with accuracy And also, because anybody can hose. Anybody can grab the gun and pull it out of their holster and hose a bunch of 3-yard and 5-yard targets. Anybody can do that.
Yeah, the distance is what really kills a lot of people.
Absolutely.
And I don't mean kills as in kills, but as in, you know, destroys their game.
Yes. So we could have a stay. We could have, like, and this isn't a negative thing, again, about anybody's match or the way anybody sets up stages. Like, for instance, Dalhousie, I find you guys have a lot of movement, a lot of running, usually.
Yep.
And there's actually accuracy involved, which is great because, you know, accuracy is – or speed is nothing without accuracy, right? If you don't hit the target, there's no sense in just hosing – you're just wasting rounds.
What is it they say? Speed is fine, but accuracy is final?
Yeah, speed is fine, but accuracy is final. But the other thing, too, like with Fredericton, I noticed Fredericton, they have a lot of up-close stuff and more sort of IDPA-ish type. You have a lot of walls you're leaning around, a lot of fault lines, a lot of ports, doorways and things like that. With my stages, I try to put some accuracy involved. I'll have targets hidden behind no-shoot targets, like steel targets. Like even at the Black Badge there, we had a no-shoot steel target at about 13 yards out. And then behind that, we had mini targets. And behind, next to those mini targets, we had a couple of no-shoot targets.
That's always fun.
It was devastating to some people, especially when they got a miss and a penalty target, and then they also got on the penalty on the steel. Yeah. So that separates. You still have to be able to shoot. We can all shoot fast. I've seen you guys shoot. You guys shoot really fast too. But if you don't have the accuracy down pat, you're going to fall behind, especially in the scoring for the game of IPSC.
Yep.
Right? Yep. And I would say right now that's my weak spot. I can pretty much break down a stage, not too bad. For a fat old guy, I can move pretty fast, but I do get occasional mics, and the mics will kill you.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in minor, especially shooting production in minor.
Yeah, tell that to Matt McKinley.
Well, listen, there's nothing done to his Glock that hasn't been done. So, I mean, yeah. That gun, like, that's a very nice, he has it done up pretty good. So,
yeah. I mean, oh, but the thing about Matt, though, fast. Yeah, he likes, and but he's accurate too, right? I mean, and he has to be shooting minor in standard division.
And he practices.
Yeah, practice. Practice is obviously key. So let's talk about practice real quick. What do you do when, I mean, you can't go to the range every day. Well, I guess some people can. I can't. And what do you do for practice? I mean, obviously dry fire drills are the order of the day, but what else do you kind of do to kind of supplement that?
Okay. So aside from the dry fire, I mean, I haven't been doing a whole lot of holster draws and mag changes or anything lately, like for months. But I still pick up the gun, and with snap caps and the dummy rounds loaded up to simulate the weight, I'll do some dry fire in the house. I'll point at light switches and different things around the room. Aside from that, when I go to a range, if I know I'm going to a range, like say after work, I'll head to a range and have my mags already loaded, because that saves you time too, right? I mean, yeah. For me, it's all about time management, because I have two young guys at home. I have my 6-year-old, my 4-year-old son. Sometimes when I get off work, my wife has to go to work, so I don't have much time there. In order to make matches on the weekends too.
And what about a plan? Do you go there with a plan?
Yeah, usually. I used to watch the Matt Burkett videos. I still have them, and I'll go and I'll watch them and just get something out of there that I didn't see before or something I forgot about. Like going to the range and shooting just for accuracy. Like if your gun is not zeroed and you're shooting at 25 yards, well, that might not make a difference in a stage, in a match where there's like 7-yard and 5-yard targets. But when you go to a match that has a few of those stages, and then it has a few stages that require accuracy, like 25 or 30-yard targets with no shoots around them, you're going to pull ahead. Because you're going to have the accuracy down pat, and you're going to know that your gun is zeroed.
And when you zero your gun, I think you told me before, you like to be shooting a little high at 10, correct?
Yeah, about an inch high, maybe.
Right.
20 yards for sure, at least an inch and a half high, probably, or an inch high. Just because you will at speed be slapping the trigger, and you may pull the gun down, even shooting that steel.
Yep.
There's the worst thing you can do, shooting over top of steel, it doesn't seem as horrible as when you're shooting and you're like, oh, you hit the plate rack. Oh, you hit the plate rack. Oh, you hit the plate rack. It's like, there's one way to eliminate that, to eliminate the chances of that, is to set your gun up a little bit high. So I set my point of impact about an inch high at least, usually about 15 yards at about an inch high. And when I go to the range, I have in my trunk, I'll carry a bunch of steel plates I had made up, and I'll have some mini IPSC targets. I don't usually practice on full-size targets because it doesn't – why make it easier for yourself?
I was just going to say that's a really good idea, is just to get a bunch of mini targets out and practice with them all the time. And that way, whenever you go to a match and they're using full-size, it's like, this is easy.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, like when exactly. I would do archery, I'd stand back farther than I needed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing you can have, like I had made up, I had a steel IPSC size plate made, and I hang it off of chains. I have two holes put through it so I can put hooks through it. In case I shoot the hooks off, I can put new hooks in it and just keep going with it. So I have those hanging up in my range, and I'll just shoot at those, like do double taps on those and try to get it close to the center as I can.
Yeah, we've got one of those, but some dinkus keeps hitting with a rifle.
Oh,
yep. Well, last time it happened, a bounty was put out, with the award being a free year's membership for whoever turned the dirt bag in.
Did anybody turn them in?
Nope.
My case, I had some steel shot at my range, and the guy that did it, it felt very bad about it. He didn't realize, he was new to shooting, he didn't realize a 223 would go through that steel.
I've been there.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about, Trevor.
In his defense, he did pay, or not pay, he did have it fixed.
Yeah, oh, and we wish that would happen too, but...
Yeah, I wish that would happen.
We've had somebody actually drag it from one location of the range to another and then shoot it. They took it from the pistol section over to the rifle section. That's deliberate.
Yeah, they're doing that on purpose for sure.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and other guys there shoot like garbage cans and stuff, and the garbage can lid. I'm not talking like a cheap little plastic barrel water type that you use for like a flotation thing for a dock.
Yeah.
He actually shot at the metal can that they had a hard time getting. Garbage can. Anyways, yeah.
It's oxygen holes. Make the fire burn hotter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So back to practice mode. Generally, do you have an average round count for your practice, or does it depend on the day and the drill?
It depends on the day and the drill, and if I have to zero it at all. Like, say, the sights just for that load of ammo, it might be off. And for me, I'm pretty particular about the ammo, if it's off or not, like if it's shooting low for me that day or high for me. Generally, I'll shoot whatever's in my mags, and I'll usually have, for my tenfold wheel, I usually have 18 mags or, not 18, 18 mags.
Wow.
That's 180 mags. Rounds. 180 rounds, roughly. And then I'll load those up again and shoot them again if I can, if I have time. If I don't, then I just shoot 180 to 250 rounds. Other times, if I have a big practice, it's 400 rounds.
Well, let's talk real quick about your gun, because we haven't even gotten to there yet. So what do you shoot? And what class and, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. What do you
run for gear? Yeah, you've been bouncing around lately.
Yeah, I have a classic gun. I have an STI Lawman 45 with a Wilson extended mag release.
Yeah, you ran that at the three-gun match last year, right?
Yes, but I didn't have the big mag release.
Oh, so that's why you only came in first.
I tell you that. See, there's two different Wilson mag releases you can get. You can get the extended large one, which has a big paddle that comes back, and it actually sticks out farther. And then you have the regular extended mag release from Wilson. Well, I used that down in AMA in Halifax in the indoor match, and oh my god, I had like three or four times the mag just dropped out of the gun. It's like slow motion, eh? You're shooting targets, boom. I was shooting 45 because it's a 1911. It should be 45. Anyways, manly, 45, and the mags were dropping out, hitting the ground. And I was like, slow motion. You could see the mag going down, eh?
No.
Ooh, click, 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 rack, rack, boom, boom, boom. And then I also have, which I tried classic a few times. I really like it. I really like that gun. I really like that round, but it's just so expensive, even for me, for bringing in like bringing in animals and whatnot, it's still expensive.
Yeah.
And also, so I, but I'm mostly, and I have an open gun too. I have a 38 Super Tanfoglio V8 with Seymour on it, and I shoot the Canadian BDX 124s out of it. And my loads are made up, that one time were made up by John Gould, because I don't even reload. I don't reload ammo at all. And the other loads were made up by Matt Lorette. And then I shoot mostly at, well, I had a standard gun, but I sold it to a guy up there.
Yeah, it's at my house right now, actually.
That's funny.
And I love that gun. I had a lot of work done to that gun. I had all the Henning parts put in it, and Eric parts, and whatever else.
What kind of gun was that for the listeners?
Limited Custom 40 Tanfoglio.
Yeah, nice.
And then I have a Tanfoglio stock 2 and 9mm with a Eric firing pin, which is factory legal for production division. And I also have a stock 3 special, it's called, with the black grips and the Eric.
So fire. So of all these guns, if you could actually carry in Canada, which one would you carry?
A stock 2. Just probably the stock 2. Stock, yes. 2 or the 45.
No. Or the 45, yeah. Yeah.
How's the stock 3 been? Because I'm hearing mixed reviews.
Mine works great. Mine was 100%. Yeah. I haven't had one malfunction with it. I fired probably about, I'm guessing, 600 rounds through it.
What have they changed from the stock 2 to the stock 3?
The stock 3 special, which I have, has a different coating on it. It has the Wonder finish, which they have usually in the States. Very, very resilient, very slick feeling coating to it. I've done mag changes with it, and I can't see any scratches. It doesn't scratch the material off, which is pretty good, because the old stock 2 I had, which was a gun coat, the material was all coming off from every mag change I did. They stopped producing that gun, I guess. But this one also comes with black grips, aluminum factory grips, and it comes with a couple black base pad mags, the aluminum ones. And that's about it. And I opted, when I got it from Sean at Freedom Ventures, I got the extended thumb release, single-sided, because a production gun, to be honest, I don't feel I need an ambi safety. It's just, it's not really necessary. You shoot double action for a shot, right?
Yep.
And then I put the Henning, or not the Henning, the, what's that called there? The Eric firing pins in them. Mm. And they work 100%.
So there's no difference in barrel length or weight or grip angle or...
Sorry. No, I should say that the holsters you can use for the open holsters, like a Ghost race holster, you can use the identical holster for the Limited Custom, for the Stock 2, the Stock 3, the 38 Super open gun. You can use the exact same holster if you use a Ghost one, because it works around the trigger guard. The trigger guards are identical for those guns. But the Stock 3, the difference between the Stock 3 and the Stock 2 is that the Stock 2 is shorter a little bit. You have less sight radius, but you also have less slide, so you have less slide weight. The Stock 3 has a regular barrel, whereas the Stock 2 has a bull barrel. And the Stock 3 has a rail, accessory rail, on the bottom. So right now on mine, I have a TLR-4 Insight, I believe it means, or Streamlight or Insight, TLR-4 with the light and laser on it. And I have the Eric front sights on them as well. But that, so it all depends on what you, I don't know, like you can't really say it depends on what type of match you're shooting or anything like that, because the guns shoot pretty similar. All I can tell the difference is I feel that the Stock 2 is easier to index on targets and faster. Also, the weight in the barrel, not in the slide, so you have less weight shifting around on top of the gun. So, I mean, there's plus and minuses to each. But the Stock 3 looks freaking cool with the light on it.
Yeah, but looks don't matter in IPSC.
Well,
no, if you have matching jerseys, that takes 10 seconds off your time.
Exactly. You need matching jerseys. If you do not have matching jerseys, you will be at least 10% slower.
Yeah, definitely.
I saw the Team New Brunswick jersey today.
What do you think of those?
Looks good. The color's going to be slightly different when we get them.
Well, yeah, they always are when you get them. I mean, mine, if you saw the pictures of the from my business ones, the NVMA ones, if you
Yeah.
saw the picture from what they sent me to what actually came in, it does look different. It
Yeah, no,
looks a
I'm
lot.
just thinking more of the actual, because New Brunswick's official colors, that maroon is kind of.
Yeah. Well, it's my I was never a fan of the maroon color.
Yeah, well, neither am I, but it's our official provincial color. So if we have a, we're representing the province, I imagine they're going to want us to go with the actual provincial colors.
Well, I was talking to Jody there, the Ipsic, New Brunswick, I guess
Section
section
coordinator.
coordinator. He didn't have any issue with that. I mean, the emblem, well, Dalhousie, or sorry, Restigouche Gun Club is participating in that as a sponsor for the shirts as well, and so is my business, and so is Matt Lorette's father, which is LP Lorette and Sons. He's basically a consultant for lobster fishing.
Cool.
And also Ipsic New Brunswick, I said, yeah, Ipsic New Brunswick is also participating in the sponsorship for that. So we wanted to give everybody equal
Billing.
percentage, I guess, on the shirt, yeah, on the shirts and whatnot. But I wanted something different, something that stuck out. And I've been to a lot of nationals. I've been to the 2005, 2006, 2008, 2009, and 2012. And the last one was in Manitoba. And I noticed everybody's shirts. There's a lot of green and blue and gold, and no one was wearing red. So I thought, well, we could use some black and some red. Not too much black because you don't want to overheat
Cook.
in the summer.
Yeah. Well, we're
Yeah.
gonna get
It's going to be warm anyway. But these shirts, they're Techwear shirts.
Nice. We
Never had
want that.
any with Techwear shirts. Techwear is good stuff. It's the carbon fiber material that they make into it is very light. It's very it dries very easily. It has the perforations in the side, so it cools you off a bit.
Awesome. I
And
won't
they're
have to wear archery shirts anymore.
there you go. And this shirt, you can chuck it, you can wash it. I washed mine before at the Nationals last year. I chucked them in the sink. I mean, it's like a dab of washing detergent. I rinsed them out. I hung them up to dry. They were dry by the by late that afternoon. So.
Yep. Oh no, it's great stuff. Same material, like I said, all my archery shirts are made out of. It breathes really well.
Yeah. Well, you don't want, like, my opinion, and this is just my opinion. I don't want three or four shirts that I won't wear, or I don't really like.
Yeah.
I want a shirt that I like and it's I'm comfortable wearing. I'm not gonna wear it. Well, I'm gonna wear it once, obviously, but I mean for the Nationals. But I mean something I like to wear afterwards as well. But I mean, the way they usually have the Nationals spaced out for teams is usually, or anybody really, is usually you don't shoot one day after the other. You shoot like they space it out, so you shoot one day and maybe work a day, and then shoot another afternoon or something like that. So you'll have time to clean your shirt up or whatever. And they
Yeah.
don't get. I mean, you're gonna be wearing it for a few hours in that morning. You might sweat a little bit in it, but I mean, you're not gonna be wearing it to the buff or the award ceremony or anything like
Now,
that. And,
what are you shooting for this year's Nationals?
I'm shooting production division.
You are, okay.
I'm on the
Dang it. Oh.
New Brunswick. I'm on the New Brunswick provincial team along with Jody Waring, Matt Lorette, and making a comeback this year is John Kamphorst.
Oh, that's cool.
And John
Awesome.
Kamphorst, I mean, John Kamphorst didn't shoot last year, but he was previous provincial champion back in 2006 and 2007. And he came in second 2008 and 2009, maybe. In 2010, he came in second as well. Anyways, John's a good shooter. He's a Glock shooter, but I won't hold that against him.
Oh, you better not. No, he can run
But
that Glock.
he does. I mean, he's a in the in, like that Glock. I mean, that's like if you've seen him shoot too, you guys have seen him shoot. He kind of defies logic there because he's a big fella. He's got a bit of a belly on him, but he can move when he has to, and he knows that gun.
Yeah,
He knows
that's right.
you know.
And then, who do we have in open?
In open division, we have, for New Brunswick, we have Peter Dean, which I believe is he's the team captain. Peter won the provincials last year in New Brunswick. Also, we have John Gould. John Gould is a veteran of IPSC in Canada. John was probably involved in IPSC just almost from the start, really. I mean, he's a wicket shooter. He loves his 45s, but he also loves his 38 supers. He's also on the team. Also, I believe George McKillop. And George was off in Afghanistan last year, but George has competed in open division in every year except, I think, 2010 that I can remember. And also Serge Noel is also on the open team.
That's right. Serge went to open this year, didn't he? Or he went open last year, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There might be there was some question. I don't know. I guess maybe you know, Mo. I'm still up in the air on it. There was some question whether or not he was going to be able to actually shoot with the team because, of course, being a match director.
Yeah, that's an iffy one there, I guess. But, well, hopefully he can. But there's also Diane Gould. She's a female shooter, but she's a very, very accurate shooter. She's been shooting IPSC for years as well, before my time. And on standard, I believe I have this right. Do I have? You can correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not exactly 100% sure. I know we have Matt McKinney.
Yeah.
Right. And we have Harold.
Yeah.
And we have you, I believe.
Well, I'm alternate.
You're the fourth one, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that you're on the team, man. That doesn't mean anything. Alternate is just. There's always four members, always.
Okay.
And the reason they have four members on each team is just in case A, one gets DQ'd or doesn't, I don't know, can't make finish the match. And also it gives you a buffer zone to have, you know, because not everybody has a great match, right? You might have a bad match. So they take the top three scores of those four shooters.
Oh, excellent.
Is that for team?
The other guy is Remy Thibault. He won the provincial this year, but the year before.
Yeah. Remy, and he's a Glock shooter as well.
Yeah.
And again, I won't hold that against him or against you.
There's only one guy on the team that's not a Glock shooter on the standard team. Or are
silence,
we all
that's funny.
No, wait a minute. They're all Glock shooters.
We're all Glock shooters, that's right.
Oh, that's funny.
What? That would be the team Glock.
Yeah, that's right.
Glock, the dream team.
Well, let's switch gears here just a little bit, and let's talk about
classic.
No, let's not talk about classic. Classic's 1911s. Everybody hates. Nobody likes 1911s.
No. Let's just back up there because there is a classic team from New Brunswick going to.
There is. Oh, well, then we do better. Yeah, we better mention them. Go ahead.
We better mention these guys. We have Stephen Stewart. Stephen Stewart is a former national Canadian champion.
I can't believe how good this guy can shoot.
In with a minor gun.
Yeah.
He shot minor when he won the Nationals. So that shot, like, I've seen him miss a target twice.
Wow.
Since 2004. And when I started shooting production, I was shooting in HK because HKs are cool and they're in all the video games. Ruger something. I don't know. Ruger. The older Ruger there, the old metal one.
The P-85 or P-89?
Yeah, one of those. And he still did awesome. He would have missed two A's. It was getting boring. He'd just go through and score a stage, and he'd be like, two A's. Okay, Ken. Okay, Steven, like, you're getting boring here. And then we also have Devin Stewart, which is his son. And Devin is shooting standard as well. I remember Devin, when I first started shooting, Devin was shooting a 45, very manly gun, and single stack gun. And we also have, I believe, Joe Goose. And I'm not sure who the fourth one is. I have to apologize, whoever that is, because I don't remember who the fourth person is.
Me either.
We could look it up, but that's probably not going to happen, huh?
Not right now, no.
No.
I don't know if it's published anywhere.
Yeah, it's in the email that got sent around.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, like I was saying before, why don't we talk a little bit about, instead of just, you know, who's on the team, let's talk about the sport itself. I don't know, Mo, do you have any memorable matches in the last couple of years? Any memorable stages that kind of pop out at you?
Oh, I have good stages and bad stages.
Yeah.
I don't usually forget them.
Tell us about a good stage, then tell us about a bad stage. Because, I mean, reveling in your triumphs is also fun, but learning from your mistakes is it's hilarious for me. So,
2008, I was in Lethbridge, Alberta, and I shot the Nationals there in production division. I had some really, really good stages after I shot my first two stages. The first two stages, I had, I don't know, a couple of mics and a penalty target, and I didn't activate something properly. You know, being from New Brunswick back in 2007, we probably, and previous to that, we didn't have any plate activators. Do you know what I mean? Like the, where you step on the plate and it activates a target?
Yep.
So when it was demonstrated, I didn't pay attention enough, and I didn't ask to demonstrate it. I just said, okay, that looks pretty simple. I'll just step on it. Well, I didn't step on it properly, and I didn't activate one of the walls to fall down, and I had to go back to the other side, so it cost me time. I was frustrated about that, and I was going to arbitrate it or something like that, ridiculous, and I was just upset. My adrenaline was pumping and everything. So anyways, while I was focused on that, I missed the walkthrough on the next stage, which was a big stage in the match. My time was like third fastest or second fastest or something like that, but I had like five mics. I missed a target 3 yards in front of me.
Oh, wow. It's amazing how poorly you can do once you start to get flustered, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And back then, one of the guys on my squad, who was a really nice guy from Alberta area, and he said, Mo, he says, you're going fast. He says, but he can see, or Frig, man. He says, you gotta hit the targets too, right? And I was like, yeah, you're right. I said, this is it. I traveled all this way and I screwed up and it's my fault and that's it. I just shoot the rest of the match pretty clean. And I did. I shot the rest of the match pretty clean. And
I had one of those stages, one of my first IPSC matches actually, and Trevor may remember this. It was one of the ones you had to shoot one side of the wall, then you had to go to the other side. And I just wasn't paying attention during the walkthrough. I even got a reshoot on it because the equipment malfunctioned. And I just completely left two plates. I just left them standing there. I didn't even shoot them. I didn't even see them.
Oh, I was in Restigouche on top of the two poles.
Yes, it was.
On what we call Nix Bay.
Yeah. Yeah, so man. I just sat there. And Chris, you know, this was one of my first matches, so I wasn't experienced. Didn't understand what he meant by if you are finished.
If.
The big if. If you're finished. If. And I was like, yeah, okay, of course I'm finished. What are you talking about? What's that?
Did he do the choking too? Like,
No, he didn't do that. Maybe had he, I still wouldn't have got it. No, but yeah, no, that really taught me a lesson, and I'm glad it was kind of early in my career that you really pay attention to the walkthroughs and make sure you know where all the targets are.
That's important too. I mean, you have to know your positions. When I do a walk, it's more important that you know where you're going to be standing sometimes than what the targets are there, because the targets are going to be there anyway. If you're in this position, you know, you can see this amount of targets.
Yeah.
And you're staying in another position. Like, that's what I do when I do my walkthrough. I know my foot has to be here before I can see these targets.
Okay, that's next. Don't jump ahead. We're going to come to that next.
Okay.
Now, so was this your good stage story or bad stage story?
First stage story. I actually know my worst stage story was at SummerSlam a couple of years back when I shot underneath an imaginary wall and got penalized for doing that. I was with the Quebec guys, and one of the guys there said, well, look, I don't think you're allowed to do that. And I said, well, if I can see the targets, you know, it's because IPSC is where you can see them. However, when the match started, Chris had said the walls go to infinity, and because we were shooting on that two-story structure, I kind of ignored that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suffered. I did.
We got complaints about that again last year. You know, can you shoot under the wall? You can never shoot under the wall. Walls always go to infinity. So we're like, well, why didn't you build them all the way down? Because it costs more money. Use some imagination.
But if you use mesh, like I would just put mesh all the way down. If that's the questions shouldn't be asked. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't have to ask the questions.
I think for Nationals, it's going to be taken care of. But I think for, you know, where they were still kind of new. Well, I guess they weren't that new at it at that point. Where a couple of years ago, it would have been SummerSlam 4, probably.
It was probably my favorite stage. It was my worst stage, my favorite stage altogether.
That, I have to tell you, that two-level structure is one of my favorite things to shoot. It's just amazing running upstairs, downstairs, shooting out through windows, in through windows. It's just, oh, it's fun.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Yeah. My favorite stage, geez, where was it? My favorite stage, although I didn't do that shoot hot on it, was down, not in Canada, actually. It was down in Las Vegas in 2011. I shot a stage that I saw in a video years before, and it was... The stage in 2011 at the U.S. Nationals was called Is Anybody There? And even though I messed it up a little bit, my time was still good, and I still did a good, had decent placing. But it's just because I'd seen other guys, like these famous shooters, like if I say these names, some people might not get who they are, like Rob Leatham, B.J. Norris, B.J. Norris, you know, like Dave Savigny, all these people have seen him shooting
Who's
that
Wayne
stage. Like, I'm shooting. Yeah, exactly. People's like, in hockey, you're like, who's Wayne Gretzky? Like, what? Yep. In shooting, this is the same thing. You say these names, and people that are into IPSC or USPSA or action shooting would know who these people are. And to shoot that stage, it's like, I have a video of that. And I was shooting actually with an Ontario shooter named Eugene. And Eugene was videotaping me the entire time, and I'm really thankful that he did. It's like, this is something I can remember. I have it on YouTube. I didn't do great on it. I had a couple of one thing I learned about Las Vegas when you're shooting out in that desert is you need grip tape.
Yes, the sweats you put kind of mag,
put them on your mags because yeah. That's what happened. I went into the door and I did a mag change. It slipped, but the mag was in the gun, not seated, but almost. And then my hand slipped off it. The mag dumped again, and then I had to put another mag in, and yeah. Then I went in and started doing my famous Mo move where I triple tap every target that I don't have to. And empty my mag on six targets or something like that, or three targets. What normally would have required six rounds or seven rounds, I think I put like 11 rounds at him.
Yeah, I think I've been known to do that a couple times too. It's fun though, if you have the extra ammo for it.
Well, yeah, and because I get ammo cheap sometimes, I tend to not value the worth of those rounds.
Yeah, when you're talking about shooting 400 rounds in a practice session, yeah, yep. Ammo's got to be readily available to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the extreme. Usually, I usually don't practice 400 rounds. I usually practice 200 rounds, 250 maybe. And sometimes I'll actually take my 22 kit and put it on my tempo wheel and fire 100, 150 rounds of 22 just to work on draw, work on presentation.
Absolutely. The only thing you can't really do with that is recoil control, but everything else is there. Grip, stance, sight picture, trigger press, everything is there.
Absolutely.
Yep. So we've got about 10 minutes left. Why don't we talk about, Trevor said he wanted to talk a little bit about breaking down stages.
Yeah.
So we wanted to go with that, Trev, kind of some tips for some of these new shooters on, you know, you've showed up to your first match now, or maybe your second or third, and you're still not quite sure what's going on. You know, maybe some tips on how to break down a stage properly and maybe efficiently.
Yeah. I remember the first time I stood in the maze.
And went, oh, crap. Now,
I peed myself and thought, I'm just going to shoot to slide lock, which I know I'm not supposed to do, but I have no idea which way to go, where to make mag changes. I was so overwhelmed, couldn't figure out the counts, you know. And I know, Mo, you've been doing this for years now, so you're like, oh, well, it's 10, 10, and 8.
8 rounds here, 10, 10, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even catch on to what you guys meant when you said 10, 10, and 8 until, like, last year.
That's all right, though. I mean, we're not
all right,
you know.
That's all right. Yeah. You know, it takes a while, too. I mean, I didn't really start catching on to shooting, getting all my hits on target until probably 2007.
Like how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, how long have you been shooting?
2004 is when I started shooting IPSC.
Cool.
Previous to that, I mean, from my employer, I shot a bit, but like once a year for qualifications. And then previous to that was when I was 11 and 12 years old. I learned how to shoot small bore 22 at the old IVI targets.
Oh, yeah.
That was years ago, and I had a couple of veterans, World War II veterans, teaching me how to shoot.
Very cool.
And their best lesson they gave me was you have to aim.
Yeah, aiming is important. Yep.
Aiming is very important. Breathe.
Yeah.
You know, watch your sight picture.
So aside from breathing and watching your sight picture, how do you break down a stage?
Well, I think for advice for a new person shooting would be don't forget to breathe.
Uh-huh.
When you get Like everybody does it. Everybody gets excited. Your breathing changes. Your heart speeds up a little bit. You get a little bit of tunnel
vision. You hold your
breath. Yeah.
I've done that before. Come to the end of a stage, it's like, oh, I can. Yes, the lungs, they work. They're still there.
And I only moved 20 yards. So yeah. Why am I breathing so hard? Because I was excited. Because I wanted to shoot the targets and I wanted to get done quick.
Yeah.
I think what we forget sometimes when we shoot targets or shoot stages is that we still have to get our hits.
Yeah.
And also time out where your mag changes should be. Work on your mag changes at home because you don't really have time to work on them when you're at the range at a match. Also, your positions. A guy named Cliff Meek. Cliff Meek is a two-time national Canadian champion in production division. Cliff Meek told me, you know, you have to watch where you're going to be standing and you still have to shoot the targets. And when you're not shooting the targets, do everything else as fast as you possibly can. If you're going to move here, do it as fast as you can. Don't jog, run.
Yeah, sprint.
Change? Sprint, yeah, sprint. Yeah. If you're going to do a mag change, get it done as soon as possible. Because you'll see guys that are new doing the mag change all the way across the range until they get to the target. And then they're still doing the mag change in front of the target because they didn't finish it.
Yeah. Well, Owen was talking about that a little bit at our black badge. You know, you do your gross motor skills as fast as you can and slow down for your fine motor skills. And that, you know, you draw the gun fast, you draw your mag fast, you drop it fast. When you bring your gun up close, you put the mag in, you know, you slow down a bit to make sure it goes in. But once the tip is in, pardon the euphemism there, you just slam it in as fast as you can and back out on target, right? Like you do your gross motor skills fast, get things done quick. I mean, the timer is there for a reason. It's there to, you know, see how fast you can do this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a Eric Raffel. He's a world champion. Like, in my opinion, the only person that's up there with him would probably be a person like Rob Leatham. He's a open division dominant shooter in the world, and he's also right now, in my opinion, he's probably a production division dominant shooter. He said when he does his mag changes, he actually has in one of his videos. He says the slow fast technique. And basically what he means is you dump the mag and get the other mag up into the mag well as fast as you can. You slow it down just for a split second to watch the mag go in so you don't fumble your mag change, and then go fast back out onto the target.
Yep.
And so that works for him. And I was like, yeah, that actually works, because instead of me fumbling my mag changes, I go fast, and then as I'm putting the magazine in, I'm watching it go in just for a split second.
Yep.
And yeah, then, it's that gross motor skills fast and fine motor skills slow.
Yep, exactly.
Now, when you approach a stage, let's say it doesn't have any steel, it doesn't have any activators or drop turners, just a whole lot of targets in different locations, what's the first thing that you want to do? Are you figuring out your count? Are you figuring out your shooting positions? Where are you going to shoot from? And follow-up question, is it run to a location and shoot, get there as fast as you can and shoot from that location? Or are you more of a shoot on the move as much as possible, or does it vary by stage? And how important is shooting on the move?
Shooting on the move is very important, but it's more or less shooting coming into position and shooting going out of position.
Right.
You can practice shooting on the move, but if it's not in the stage, then why are you shooting on the move? If you're faster to shoot from a stationary position, then do it. But if you have to travel and there's only like maybe a couple targets in front of you, then just keep going and run by them as you're running by them, hose them or get the rounds in there, right? Boom, 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 boom. You know, it might take three rounds to get the target or get the rounds in there, but it like you said, it all depends on the stage.
That's another quick follow-up question there. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm known for that. The whole triple tapping sometimes, when you do your round count, when you're calculating when you're going to do your mag changes, do you factor in a couple of extra rounds in case you have to do a follow-up?
Well, Trevor mentioned a stage that doesn't have any steel in it. And in my opinion, a stage that doesn't have any steel in it does not have as much danger as a stage that does have steel in it, because steel is an A zone hit or smaller than an A zone sometimes, depending on the distance. So when, like, say, from the right side of the stage, there's four paper and two steel, then for me, that's a higher danger area, because the paper may not be, the steel is. Because if I miss on that steel at distance, and you know the steel is a minimum 11 yards, I have to factor that in. So when I go into that position, I don't want to go in with 10 rounds. I would like to go in with 11 rounds.
Right.
To add me some insurance. Now, if the targets are all up close, it's, I guess, more valuable, in my opinion, to time your rounds out and time your mag visit, your mag changes. When you're moving, James Story there is a really good open shooter. He's been top 10 in Canada, pretty well every national he's ever shot. He's provincial champion there in New Brunswick, numerous years. He said, whenever you're moving, you reload. If you have to move from one position to another, then you're more than likely 95% of the time you're going to be reloading.
What does it say? So, what do they say whenever you do shotgun? If you're not killing, you're filling.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not shooting there, you should be loading that tube up. Same thing with IPSC. So for me, it's always, how many rounds am I going to shoot from this position? How many rounds am I going to shoot from that position? Everything in between is about you getting there quicker. So mag change, boom, go, run, get in there. Take your hand away from the gun. Don't run with both hands on the gun unless it's a very, very short distance, like 2 or 3 steps. That's always worked for me. So, yeah, you add insurance in different places, but the guys that don't have to do a mag change in front of a bunch of targets are the guys that are going to win the stage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So coming back to shooting while leaving the box and shooting while entering the box, and I'm just using that in general terms. Basically, it could be shooting positions. Last week at our mini match, we started off in a box with a target array with no shoot in the center, and it was 8 rounds. You had targets on the right, targets on the left. You had 8 rounds to shoot, and you had to back up and shoot around a barricade or a wall at a few more targets. So I thought, well, if I could shoot these guys while backing up on my way to the barricade, do a mag change right after I shoot them, and hopefully I'll have them all shot, I'll have my mag change done, I'll lean around the wall, shoot these guys, and then take off running for the other end of the stage. But I found myself moving backwards so slowly because I wanted to get my hits, and that I thought to myself, could this have not been faster if I had just drawn, sprayed them, ran and changed the mag, shot the next targets, and then took off to the other end of the stage?
Yeah.
So there's got to be a balance there. You're moving, but you're moving very slowly.
Yeah. Well, if you move slowly, were the shots hard? Was there no shoots around them?
Yeah.
Well, then those are danger. Those are danger shots. That's what I call them anyway. Those are danger shots because you do have to aim. The payoff is great if you can move out and back up and shoot them at a good pace. But if you can't do that, then maybe it is best to just draw and shoot the harder targets first to get your solid hits. Because what's the disaster on that? The disaster is if you clip a no shoot, or even worse, get a no shoot in a mic.
Yeah, you get a penalty and you don't know it, and you don't follow up with another shot into your scoring target. You're hooped.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So in that position, I think if I was to do that and I saw that and the targets were roughly 5 yards or 7 yards, I would probably shoot the targets that are most challenging to get them out of the way, and then shoot the targets that are less challenging as I'm backing up, because I don't have to worry. I can get a C hit maybe, or I can back up on a no shoot target, which is really bad, especially if there's a chance that you might hit it. So if you had to slow down to get your hits, then chances are that you should have stayed on that target and shot it first and then started moving back.
Okay. I've also seen...
And going into a position too, like when you go into a position, people say like, all right, for instance, I guess I'm not really harping on IDPA or anything like that. I like IDPA. I think it's a really great shooting sport. But with going into a position, it's usually the first target you see, whereas in, I guess, like IDPA, they would say the immediate threat,
right?
And go in your, and that whoever has the whatever target's painted with a gun, you shoot that one first. In my opinion, you come around that corner once you start shooting. It's game on, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if that guy has a knife or that guy has a gun or whatever. If we're talking about IDPA and self-defense shooting, you come around that corner when the bullet starts flying. I mean, you're not going to say, well, hey, you didn't go in tactical priority. They're just going to start shooting at you. So you shoot whatever you see first. That way you get your hits in first, because more than likely you saw that target first. So the same thing for me for IPSC. When I come in around a position, that target is right in front of me. There's no reason, unless I have to leave on a close target, let me go in, shoot the target that I can see first, engage it, because more than likely it's probably a close target. Or maybe I should say I was starting from a hard position like that. I would draw on the hard target, because your draw should be the same. Your draw speed from a close target to a far target should be the same. What's different is the amount of trigger prep and sight picture that you have. So I draw on the harder target, maybe, like say like a 15-yard target, and then the 2 3-yard targets or 3 3-yard targets, I would hose them as I'm backing up, because they're only 3 yards.
Yep.
But anyways, that's how I usually work stuff.
So generally speaking, then you shoot far to near.
Yes, and here's the reason I do that. Here's the reason I do that sometimes, not all the time. Everything's going to be a little bit different. The reason I do that is because you will speed up and shoot faster going far to near, as opposed to near to far. But you can draw fast. We can all draw fast on that target. You, Matt, Trevor, everybody, we're going to draw about the same speed on that target. But while you're taking that long transition out to that far target and taking your time because you want to get your good hits, I'm going to be backing out as I'm shooting the close targets.
That's right. Yep, that makes perfect sense.
My draw speed is going to be the same. If you've ever, there's one exercise that I did that was a Matt Burkett exercise. It was transition drills. He had a target set at 25 yards, another target set at roughly 15 yards, and another target set at roughly 7 yards. And what you do is you draw, shoot two rounds at the, this is not exactly how it goes, but you draw to put two rounds at the close target and then transition out to the far target and get two solid hits. You reholster, you draw again, do the far target, and then come into the close target. And you record your times each time and your transitions each time. And you do that, it goes back from the center target to the far target, to the center target, to the close target. You know, and anyways, when you look at the results overall, and I have my sheets from even 2005, 2004 when I was doing this, whenever I went from a far target to a near target, I went twice as fast.
Now that's something... Yeah, that's something there, a little aside, that people should, if you're going to get serious about this, you need to get yourself a timer. You need to get your own timer to practice with at the range. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time.
Exactly. And if you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you can download the apps for a timer, which
if you can find a good one that works. Mine sucks.
Yeah, I have an Android one there. The first one I had sucked. This one doesn't work too bad. It works great for Airsoft. And that's something else you can do, too, is Airsoft.
You can do that at home.
You can do that at home. You can shoot airsoft out in your back step there.
And then when the kids get rowdy, I mean, you know, zing.
Zing. That'll learn you.
Exactly.
Anyway, so I hope that helps.
Yeah.
I hope that helps, guys. Anyways, that's what works for me. I'm no national champion or anything like that, but I mean.
Yet.
Well, maybe if I start practicing, maybe that might help.
Well,
the guy that won last year, Nick King. I mean, he was well deserved win. He shot quick and he shot fast and he was accurate. I had no misses and no penalties last year at the Nationals.
That's cool.
Fifth place overall, and I think the guy in fourth was like 20 points ahead of me, and the guy in third was 20 points ahead of him.
So do you think you played that one just a little bit too safe? You could have gone a little bit faster.
I could have gone a lot faster. I played it a bit safe. And one thing you should do, like I said about sighting your gun in, I can't blame my gun. It's me. What I did was my front sight was a little bit loose. It's like, it's not a big deal. All these targets are close. And then we came to that stage where they had a bunch of steel and another stage where they had a fire steel on the left and fire on the right. And I have it on video somewhere. And I shot it and I was like, oh my God, it's like a 30-yard huge big size popper and I'm missing it. And then I went to the other side and did the same thing. I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing? And I'm like, well, you know, it's your own fault. Well, maybe you should have made sure your sight was on properly, and it didn't fall off or anything, but it was wiggling around. I ended up selling that gun to Steve Virch, who's a really good production shooter from Gagetown. He moved out west to Alberta actually, but I think he tightened it up anyway.
Well, that's good.
And last year at SummerSlam, I had no misses and no penalties.
Nice.
So did I win because I was going faster than, say, the guys in second, third, or fourth, or whatever? Or the guys that placed below me at the Nationals? No. I did better than them because I did not miss the target. I did not have any penalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is hard.
Well, let's talk just real quick. I know we're running out of time here, but what's the difference? I mean, in your opinion, speed versus accuracy. How fast? Like how many C shots will you give up? You know, to save a half second.
Yeah. How much faster do you have to be to trump accuracy?
Well, you have to actually hit the target. I mean, really, that's the first part.
on up close targets in a really quick stage where there's no movement, you have to go really fast. You shouldn't be firing any extra shots. May changes draw have to be spot on. You know, trigger freeze. You shouldn't have. You know, you can't really have any up close targets. But when there's more distance involved and there's more movement involved, then the hit factor goes down, and then accuracy comes in. But accuracy is what's going to win the match.
Right.
If you look at the world championship and who won the worlds, which I believe was Robert Fogel last year or a couple years ago, he shot a Glock. And when he practiced, from what I know, he had mini IPSC targets all over his house. And that's what he practiced on, was mini IPSC targets. So he practiced for accuracy. And that's what won him the match. And he's also fast on his feet, too. He's leg movement. He runs like a bat out of hell.
Yeah, just going back to your other comment there, where just do everything fast. Go faster. Even if your shooting is kind of subpar right now, who cares? There's something you can work on. If you can't work on anything else, go faster.
Yeah, if you can't afford to buy tons of ammo, then practice dry firing or get a 22 kit on top of it. If you don't have the ammo, you don't have time to get to the range, practice in your basement. Do your make changes. Do your draws. Like, it takes some effort. No one just walks into it and says, hey, I'm a superstar shooter and all that. There's no one that does that. No one.
No.
Not Eric Raffel. Eric Raffel, you know how Eric Raffel learned how to shoot well? From what I was told, he was shooting a single stack 45, and every time he missed, his dad would take away a mag. So by the end of the day, he'd have no mags. Well, after a while, he said, well, I don't like that. I don't have to keep loading my one mag. So he started shooting more accurate.
Yeah.
And that was dad trained him. And I mean, nice. Look at him now. He's a world champion. And you see what he shoots. He shoots A's all the time. And they're fast. But
I guess the short answer there is speed doesn't trump anything. Get your hits.
No. Get your hits.
And get them fast.
Get them fast. Do everything else fast, but get your hit. Like, you get to slow down. You have to get your sight picture. There's no such thing. Very rarely, like a 3-yard target or maybe even a 5-yard target. And sometimes you'll get lucky at the 7-yard target, where guys hammer the target. They take one sight picture and they press the trigger twice. They go boom, boom. And I've done that. It works sometimes. But when you have to shoot a 25-yard target or a 15-yard target or even a 10-yard target,
doesn't work.
You have to aim. You got to follow that sight and wait for it to come back down and time it.
Yep.
You have to know what you can do at each distance. You have to know what you can shoot at 3 yards and what you can shoot at 25 yards and what each requires for sight picture and trigger control.
Very good. All right. Well, anything else there, Trev, you want to quickly follow up with?
No, it's been amazing. Actually, I was going to make one comment. You know, he's talking about nobody shows up and says they're going to light the world on fire and stuff. I was so excited about IPSC that when I showed up to my black badge, I already had the belt and the mags and the Sierra Speed holster, and I had all my gear.
I remember that.
What's that?
I seem to remember that in your emails and stuff, and you had a couple of YouTube stuff there.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Before I even got to the Black Badge course, I had been taking video and emailing it to Mo and having Mo analyze my video, I think, before I even met him in person.
That's funny.
It cost me a bottle of scotch, but well worth the investment.
Oh, yeah. Well worth my investment, too. I mean, you're an active guy. You're an active shooter up there, and you're contributing to IPSC up there greatly. I mean, and you're promoting it as well. I mean, you can't ask for a better person to get into it up there. I mean, you know, like you and Serge, and you guys are, Serge is a little bit nuts, but
a little, yeah. He's a totally different animal.
He is. Yeah. There's only one surge.
Thank
and that's
God.
A good thing. Yeah. All right. Well, one quick wrap up. It's Blake Tibbetts that is the lad, the fourth member of Classic.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Blake Tibbetts.
So I looked that up just to make sure that name didn't get left out of the other list that got read in its entirety. So yeah. So Justin. Blake, we didn't forget about you. Well, we did, but I looked it up. So yeah. Like he's listening anyway. So. Anyway, Mo, I gotta thank you for coming on. I mean, it was even short notice. We called Mo up like 15 minutes ago. Well, not now, but 15 minutes before the show started. Like, hey, Mo, you want to come on and do a show with us? What now?
First, it was like, who is this?
Yeah, who is this, and why are you calling me?
You're doing a what cast?
but yeah, no, it was informative, and I hope the listeners got something out of it too. So thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks very much for having me, guys.
Mo, before you go, do you want to tell the listeners your nickname for us?
McLot? No. Jesus. Now I forget.
Way to put him on the spot there, Trevor.
I've had some beer. McLatchy?
Furlatchy.
Furlatchy. That's it. Furlot and Latchy.
Yeah. Oh, the Furlatchy showed up. Yeah, we hear that every now and then.
Furlatchy. Yeah, you do it in an Italian accent. Furlatchy. Yeah,
there it is.
Very good. Well, if you're in New Brunswick and you need ammo for Ipswich, contact Mo. He's at, ammosalesnb.ca or something. nb-ammo@rogers.com, right?
Yep. And I'm the match ammo guy for the Nationals.
Very
yeah,
cool.
Right. Yeah. We'll be testing the chronographs with Mo's ammo.
Very awesome. Good. All right. Well, once again, Mo, thanks for joining us. And everybody else out there, we'll see you next time, I guess.
Awesome.
Later.
Talk to you guys. Take care.
Thanks, man.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, time to get a gun.